Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borak Thung, Earthlitz, and welcome to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. On this, the week of dread. Yes, this weekend, Saturday the 7th of September, is the day of dread. A big opportunity for everybody to celebrate everyone's favourite futuristic lawman, with loads of signings happening around the world, lots of comic book stores getting involved, and plenty of stuff going online. So make sure you check out the events list, which is on 2000ad.com/news. We've got Colin McNeil signing in Newcastle, Patrick Goddard and T.C. Eglinton signing in Bristol, Ian Edgington and Steve Yowell signing in Birmingham. We've got a kids workshop with Ned Hartley at Gosh Comics on the Saturday morning. We've got a mega signing with Mick McMahon, John Higgins, Dan Abnett and Sally Jane Hurst in the afternoon at Gosh. Ewan Coveney and PJ Holden at Big Bang Comics in Dublin. Andy Diggle, Nick Brokenshire and Abby Ryder at Travelling Man Manchester. Staz Johnson is at Travelling Man Leeds. Anthony Williams is at Tate Comics in Florida. Alex DeCampi and Simon Fraser are signing at Anyone Comics in Brooklyn in New York. We've got Lawrence Campbell and Connor Boyle will be at Dread Live Art Jam at Orbital Comics and Gallery in London. Phil Winslade will be at the Hi-Viz Street Culture Festival in Birmingham. Assembly House in Leeds will be staging a live art jam and Judge Dredd tribute art exhibition. And in Leeds, the Hyde Park Picture House is going to be screening the Dredd movie. And then at the NICE convention in Bedford, which is this weekend, we've got Ian J. Colbar, Ben Oliver, Alan Davis, Ryan Brown, Simon Bisley, Dylan Teague, David Hine, Pete Doherty, Mark Farmer, all there signing and sketching away. And there's plenty of other things going on around the globe as everyone celebrates the Day of Dread. If you're not able to get to any of the events, then make sure you go online and take part in the Love Fest for Judge Dredd. If you're on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, make sure you tag everything. Hashtag Day of Dredd, and our social media bots will retweet and share, etc., etc., etc. Let's fill the world with a bit of Judge Dredd, if that's not a bit too on the nose at the moment. Coinciding with the Day of Dredd, we also have Judge Dredd The Small House, which is the collection of the strip from last year by Rob Williams and Henry Flint. And we've got those guys on the podcast to talk a little bit about one of the critically acclaimed Dredd stories of recent years, which brought to a head things that have been brewing for a very long time. But it's not necessarily a story that you need all the continuity to enjoy. Some absolutely cracking work from Rob and Henry. The conversation does get spoilery, so if you've not read The Small House, or you're not up to date on your most recent Dredd, so I'm thinking like the past 3 or 4 months, then there may well be spoilers in there for you, just to warn you. But it was fantastic to get them on the line and chat not just about The Small House, but their plans for the future for Judge Dredd, and what's happening with the Day of Dredd. So, Small House is out this week in trade paperback. It's been a little while since it's been in the prog, though this is quite a quick turnaround for us in terms of getting something into collection. Rob, for those who've not read Small House, who weren't reading the prog towards the tail end of last year, tell us the basic premise of the strip.
Well, it kind of...
I should have known you were going to ask this, wouldn't it? It's all the difficult questions. The Small House kind of is, in some ways, is a summation of about 10 years worth of storylines, which I've done in Judge Dredd, and also in prior to that in The Low Life, and which makes it sound like the type of thing which, you know, you need 10 years worth of history to understand, which hopefully it isn't at all. But the basic sort of summary is that Judge Dredd finds out over time that there is a character called Judge Smiley, who has been a council member without portfolio, which basically means he's the judge's version of a CIA spook, if you will. And he's been operating in the background with assassinations and various dodgy things, all in order to keep the judges in power and to keep democracy pushed down. And he's been operating across the globe. And Dredd, this niggles with Dredd over some time. And he basically, at some point, just decides that, in his words, a creep is a creep and murder is murder. And so he's got to take Smiley down. But I think Dredd knows all too well going in that if he starts pulling at these threads, that the entire house might fall down. And that's a play on the title, which is clever.
So, as you said, there is backstory to this, but Small House does read quite well for something that where you do have a little bit of continuity, but it's one of those stories where the continuity is not onerous, I guess.
It reads quite well, does it?
It reads quite well, yes.
Well,
yes.
Thank you.
In my humble opinion.
No, I mean, because I kind of knew what I was going to be talking about a fair bit this week with the graphic novel coming out, I picked it up and started rereading it the other day. And one thing that took me is we do kind of do a bit of sort of exposition and bringing new readers up to date. But we kind of do, I do it in a kind of bloody-minded way where we kind of drop you in it, and then a few episodes in, then we kind of explain. So, I mean, I like to think that it's accessible. God, I really hope it is accessible. But it would be just bad writing to have that on page two in summary. Here's what we did before. So I think hopefully you get it through characters and Smiley and Dredd meet very early, and that was part of the reason, was just to sort of lay out the lay of the land of this thing, of the chessboard that they're going to be playing on from that point on, really, and to lay down the challenge. Hopefully it is entirely understandable to new readers.
Because this isn't the first time this story has bubbled to the surface, had a big sort of dramatic element to it. Because, of course, the trifecta crossover from a few years ago was a major component of the backstory to this. Have you always had this in mind, that it would be this kind of showdown for Dredd and Smiley?
No, it was kind of very much a sort of an incremental thing that built all the time. I mean, we introduced Cy Spurrier, Al Ewing, and I came up with Smiley, and I genuinely forget who first suggested him, because we were drunk in a pub in New York, and that's what we did in when we were planning out Trifecta. And then over time, I did a little three-parter with Henry called Act of Grud, which was kind of teasing the fact that Smiley was operating in the background, and he was using stealth judges to assassinate, and the Dredd and a small little cabal of Dredd's trusted friends were going to go after Smiley. And then I got involved in writing Suicide Squad for DC, which basically took up my entire life for about 2-3 years, so I went away from it for a while, and I actually think that helped the story, sort of laying the foundation for Active Grud, and almost like feeling like Dredd was stewing over it for several years, because this offended him so much. And I think so much of it, the story is about Dredd. I think his personal, just, I think he just, he's, I think Dredd's just one of these people. He just needs a fight. And Smiley just happens to be the next person to, in line, And I think after Smiley's gone, he'll go on, he'll find someone else to fight, because that's just who he is. So there's all kinds of personal little motivations in there, as well as the wider sort of plot machinations of the entire thing.
I wonder, just briefly to Henry on this point, because Henry, you were partly involved in the Trifecta crossover, so you've been on this journey with these characters, with this storyline. What's been your take on how it's evolved and your involvement with it?
I remember my first involvement with it was meeting everyone, the writers in Bristol. I think Rob, you mentioned everyone was having a drink in New York. And then I think I got wind of it in Bristol at the convention there, and that's when it all started and I came on board. But everyone said, you know, hush, don't tell anyone, because Trifecta had this, so you know, obviously it sort of surprised everyone when everything came together. So there was something quite extraordinary going on there. And then, of course, you know, it went on to other things, which I didn't. I thought Trifecta was a one-off. I didn't think it would go off into its own spiraling little stories here and there. You know, so it's been an adventure, really.
Well, I mean, there was one. Cy and Al, this is a good few years ago. We got together in London again, and not New York this time. And we were in a pub, and we tried to knock back and forth whether or not we could do a second Trifecta, and it just kind of just wasn't happening. It just didn't. I don't think any one of the three of us came away from that afternoon kind of thinking, oh, it all felt a bit forced. So I think at some point or another, I forget when, I kind of mentioned to Al and Si, I went, look, can I just finish this Smiley story? And I think they were both, you know, just happy to let me have him effectively and do what I would. It is in a way, the Small House is kind of like a sequel to Trifecta, but it's just with you know, with Henry and I doing it.
And with something like The Small House, how much is a collaboration on this? Because you've worked together well before. Is there a back and forth, or is it a straightforward relationship of, Rob, you write the script, it gets given to Henry, Henry draws it, end of story?
Yes, pretty much that. I've heard that you know, you have a one-to-one with other artists, but I think I prefer getting the script straight from you, Rob, without any sort of talking in between. I think it works well that way.
Charming. You don't have to talk to me. This is where I embarrass Henry. I think this is I think it does work in really, really well. And it did on when we did it on Titan. We had the same. It's kind of unusual. You have a different relationship with every kind of comic you do. Sometimes you have no relationship whatsoever, and sometimes you talk a lot constantly about it. I think with working with Henry, I mean, I send the scripts into Matt Smith at 2000 AD. Matt passes them on to Henry. And I think this is where I'm going to embarrass Henry. I think what amazes me is Henry's storytelling, his visual storytelling is so good that the first time that when I see the pages is very often not far off when they're being published in the prog, and everything absolutely works. And very often when you work on other comics, you get especially when you work on the American comics, you get a lettered PDF, and sometimes the art comes through and you think, oh my God, the art doesn't match what I wrote at all. And you have to rewrite a bunch of dialogue to actually make it all fit. There's absolutely none of that is necessary with Henry, because frankly, Henry's so good at what he does that, you know, I can give the scripts to Matt, Henry draws them, and it just comes out and it all just flows, you know? So, touch wood, it works without us having to go through the hell of having to converse with each other, obviously. That would be awful.
Yeah, that would be hell, wouldn't it?
It'd be awful. Awful.
But I think Rob, I think when you send me the scripts, they're very, very detailed on the on the emotion of what is going on in the story, rather than what is there's no camera angles. You don't say this, that, and the other. It's more or less what people are feeling, and that's the important thing that comes across. And I kind of like attach myself onto that and go, yeah, this is great. It's like it's like a film almost. It's quite amazing.
Well, I think that's one of the great things about writing Dread, and then the way like Henry draws Dread is very often I will put in the script how Dread is feeling. Now, as we know, Dread is notoriously this sort of, you know, stoic titan, you know, who says very little and doesn't betray his feelings. But the script will very often have, you know, as Henry says, we'll have written how Dread is feeling in this particular instance, and that might not come across in the, you know, in the finished strip, you know, overtly, but
yeah, I do tend to write Dredd as a bit of an emotional being, I think.
What I'd like to see is at one point your scripts published in some way online or something like that, just so people can see, you know, because you could read them themselves as an art form, your scripts.
Oh, cheers, man.
Yeah. It's like a book you're reading almost. It's yeah.
Well, I think one thing is kind of nice. I think it was Titan. We talked to Henry and I talked at again in a bar. There's a theme emerging. We talked in a thought bubble one year, and I remember Henry saying, like, Matt, he gets the scripts. He doesn't know the story fully formed going in. So when Henry's getting the scripts through, very often he's reading it and going, oh my God, this happens. Oh my God, this happens. And I think, you know, one thing Small House does really well, hopefully, and what people seem to respond to when it was running in the prog, is the fact that it is very, no matter what else is going on, it's very much got that 6-page 2080 cliffhanger thing of the big end of week cliffhanger of, right, what's going to happen. And people were, when it was running in the prog, people were responding going, I can't wait for next week's prog to find out what happens. So it's kind of interesting. Again, when you work with some artists, you give them the entire story and they know what's coming. But Henry's getting the scripts pretty much in the same way that the readers are, sort of, and making it all work from there.
In terms of themes for this story, because there's been a number of series stories that make up the background to Small House, each with their own individual theme. So you get something like Titan, where it's about how far Dredd can be pushed, you know, where does the law end and the man begin, that kind of thing. You've got Trifecta, which is themes of response to severe trauma and hopelessness and wishing to start again, and you know, the rise of alternative systems and things like that. With the Small House, it's something very specific. Rob, do you want to take us a bit through a bit about the themes of the Small House and where you saw it going as you were writing it?
Well, it's very early on. There's the initial showdown where I thought Smiley is such a clever villain, but he's not going to just wait for the. He knows Dredd's coming for him, so he just preempts it, and then he just turns up and he says, "Oh, I think we should have a chat." There was something for a while. I felt like if you're going to write Dredd and you're going to enjoy writing Dredd, and I think at some point you've got to. I felt like you have to pay your dues, and part of paying your dues is confronting head on and reminding people that Dredd is a fascist and that Justice Department are fascists. And one of the brilliant things about Dredd, and you know how Wagner and co. set it up over the years, is he can be the good guy and the bad guy in any story, as we know. But I think it's easy to forget, you know, that. The fact that, you know, fascism is a huge part of this story and the framework of this story, and especially with what's going on in the world around us right now, I just felt it was important to sort of have that. So in the script, I remember I forget if I said to Henry, let's give this half a page, or if I just basically said, let's give this a big amount of space and just have, you know, Dredd face on and just a very simple line with fascists. And I mean, there's a lot of other themes in it. I mean, it's very much a character piece about Dredd. It's not all about that, but that was one of the big structural thematic points I wanted to confront with the Small House.
And what was your reaction to the reactions to that? Because I saw a lot of chatter online. Lots of people have very strong opinions about Dredd. You know, some people say, well, he's not a fascist because of this and this. He's always harsh but fair. Things like that. As somebody who has written something that says something strongly, that says something straightforwardly, that does not hold back from making a point, as the writer, how do you respond to the reactions to that?
Well, he plainly, I mean, he is a fascist. That's 100%. You know what I mean? But he can be a lot of things within that. He can be the good guy in a certain story. He can be the bad guy within a story. But the framework of Justice Department is a totalitarian regime. Now, Smiley says, and and Smiley's not wrong in this. He says, if you look at where Dredd's world is and sort of the fact that, you know, it's an irradiated sort of dead world with a few little, you know, and the mega cities are kind of, I think it was Smiley says a line about something like, you know, this world already died. We're just clinging on and refusing to fall into the pit. And the only way we can do that is by control and having a easy democracy won't work. Smiley might be right in the circumstance they're in, but the fact of the matter is that there's no point sort of going, oh, he's not really a fascist, or he's, you know, he's harsh but fair, or all these things. He's not any of those things. If you read the strip over the years, he is he's Dredd, he's the law, he's horrible to the citizens. But he also, I mean, again, another thing, one thing I really wanted to do in The Small House is there's a very deliberate chapter where there's a dune shark gets loose in the city and it's eating citizens, and Dredd turns up and stands in between the citizens and the dune shark and protects the citizens. And this is the this is the conundrum of sort of like living in Dredd's world, in Dredd's city. You would be terrified of the judges. They are the bogeymen. They'll haul you away for doing next to nothing, dropping a sweet wrapper on the pavement. But if the dark judges turn up, or a dune shark gets loose, or any one of the millions of things that will kill you stone dead in Mega City 1, you want Dredd to arrive. So it's and this is part. All these things are tied into why he and the world and the strip are just fascinating and endlessly enjoy new iterations. And, you know, you can tell any number of stories within this framework.
Henry, that moment that Rob referred to there, where Dredd is talking to Smiley, and there's so little movement in that. It's a talking heads moment. There's not lots of action. You've not kind of gone mad with dramatic angles and whatnot. Was that a conscious choice to kind of keep the moment still and focused?
I think in the script you mentioned a few things like Smiley drinking a cup of tea and dunking biscuits and he's sitting down in a sort of very rigid posture and things like that, and the kind of thing, it just draws itself after a while. But like not a lot was going on, but not a lot of things needed to go on to make the scene work, because it was only about three pages, wasn't it? Two or three. And the big splash of Dredd there, sort of like just staring directly from Smiley's point of view, it seemed to, you know, capture that. I think I mentioned some of that was for me it was a pivotal axis moment of the story, I think, that particular scene. So
and I think on the next page as well, there's like when Smiley goes, there's a little panel where, this is again just how good Henry is, but like the camera, and I forget if this was in the script or this is Henry, but the camera is right by one of Smiley's cups of tea, and Dredd's in the background, and the cup of tea is left and it's bigger than Dredd, and Dredd is small by comparison. And so these little things are just like, maybe other people might not notice, but from a writer's point of view, you just kind of, you know, you love stuff like that. You just kind of, it's doing your job for you, you know?
When you have creators who are able to trust each other in this way, what do you think that actually brings? Because, you know, Rob, you're asking for stuff in the script. Henry, you know, you're picking upon stuff that Rob is asking you to do, but also bringing your own thing to the strip. Do you think that comes across on the page?
Yes. I tell you what it does, right? I'm
I don't know, I'm big on this, but this is absolutely true, whether ever people, ever writers want to admit it or not. But, you know, any writer is only as good as the artist they're working with, because you can write
and
the best...
That's
true, but you can write the best script you think you've written in years, and it can be mangled on the page by the artist. Or you can write a script which you think, oh, that's all right, and then it can be glorious on the page because the artist does an amazing job and brings it to life. So, I mean, one thing... working with Henry, working with Chris Weston, working with Disraeli, these guys are so good that it allows, it makes me a better writer because I can write subtext. I can take away a lot of the dialogue and let the acting of the characters on the page tell the story. And even, you know, one thing, you know, from a writer's point of view, you're like, no, a little drooling when you're like this. You can actually, you can have a dialogue say one thing and you can have a performance of the character say something else entirely. Now that sort of gets me very excited in a nerdy writery way, but you can only do that with a really, really good artist, because if you try that with someone who isn't a good visual storyteller, hasn't got the character acting down, it just doesn't come across and it just all just falls flat in his face. And I've had enough of that over the years as well, working with artists who can't deliver that type of stuff. So when you do get someone like Henry or Chris or Disraeli, you just, it's manna from heaven, really.
Obviously, 2080 comes out every week and you get a slice of the story with every issue, but I'm sure pretty much all creators have one eye on the collection. Henry, what for you, are there any considerations that you give when you're doing this week by week by week, episode by episode by episode, of keeping in mind how it's going to appear in the trade? Is that something that even enters your consciousness while you're working?
When I'm working, I'm thinking, I don't really think of the trade. I think of the 6 or 5 pages, the story and the cliffhanger and how it ended. You know, the first page, usually a splash, you know, with the title. And I kind of do it in a traditional 2000D way where you don't really think about trade. And also, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, you used to have... center spreads as well, and that they've kind of been taken out in favor of they can't really be reproduced very well in graphic novels, so you've got to think of different ways of doing the story without the center spread and things like that. But I don't know, it's I don't think of it too much. The graphic novel side of it, except for the continuity. I kind of look at episode 1 after I finish something, and then episode 10, and if they vaguely look the same, but then I'm happy. But you know, sometimes I go far away from how a character originally looks, you know, and just go, oh no, you know, I wish I could do the first couple of episodes again, you know, just to get it right. But you know, apart from the little tiny things like that, then continuity, I think, is the big thing that I get most het up about, I think.
And when it all does come together, do you see the joins? I mean, this is a question for both of you, really, because, you know, you are working in an episodic format, but at the same time, you know, the story's got to hang together when read in one piece. So when you see collections like Trifecta, I mean, Trifecta's a bit different because there's lots of different stories going on there, but when you get collections like Titan, for example, do you see the joints, or is much more actually I managed to kind of, you know, make it read quite smoothly?
I think it's kind of it's interesting looking at a trade. I mean, you can, because the thing is, you try and put little cliffhangers in virtually on every page, you know, the smaller ones, and then the big ones at the end of every episode. But it does kind of just flow into itself, really. I mean, I think going into this, it just felt like what you try and do is think, what will, how much is too much, you know, is there enough fat in the bones to make this last, what, 8 episodes or 9 episodes? And this sometimes, you know, with this one, like with Small House, it felt like it was 10. And then it's just me flailingly kind of suggesting that to Matt, kind of 10? Is 10 all right? You see, you don't kind of go in thinking that'll be a trade necessarily. And then, you know, you sometimes you get sort of like 3/4 of the way through, and then I, like in this case, I kind of sent a little email to Matt and saying, can I have 8 pages for the last episode, please? Because I've plainly misjudged it a little and it needed a little more room to breathe. No, I think you're just more, from a writing point of view, you're more concerned with telling an emotionally satisfying story, really, you know, setting certain things up at the start. And Small House is very, I mean, one thing I like about Small House is it is very Chekhov's gun. It has got, the ending is very, very much put in place at the start. But one thing that's nice is that sort of like, you know, Matt Smith, the editor, he allows you to do that. And he kind of trusts you. I mean, Matt's very good. He's a big part of why the Small House works. I mean, Matt, he will, you know, he'll come in with some notes at the start normally. And they're usually really good and you know, very sort of adroit notes, and then pretty much leaves you alone. And I think, I suspect, oh God, I've been how long have I been working for 2018 now, Henry? I think I've been, must have been almost 20 years. What about you?
25 or something like that, I think. Yeah. Well, when did you start?
I think it was probably something like 2001. Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, I came on just as Matt became editor. You were there already, and we've all been here a while. And I like to think, hopefully, that Matt trusts us. And it's all. I think it's part of the reason. There's certain sort of, just the fact that like there's plot threads in the Small House which go back 10 years in Low Life, and you know, Matt has not once kind of said to me, "Look, come on, you know, tie these up." You know, he's just allowed me to kind of tease certain plot threads out. And sometimes you get to them a year later, and sometimes you get to them like 8 years later or something. And it's that level of kind of trust is part of the reason why the Small House is what it is, I think.
There are some readers who would prefer the kind of continuity of Dread to be much tighter, to be much more controlled. The idea that, you know, that one can put away a plot thread and not come back to it for some time. But I suppose writers like yourself, you want to write the stories that you want to write. You know, if the more kind of controls you put on stuff, it's kind of the enemy of creativity almost.
Yeah, and also you want to write when you have the energy and you're enthused to write it. I mean, and sometimes you're busy with other work. Sometimes you're just not feeling it or something. So, I mean, for me, I was coming off like 2-3 years working for DC very, very intensely. I was pretty burnt out with the DC stuff. And so just sitting down to write Dread in little 6-page episodic chunks and knowing that Henry was drawing it, because I, you know, didn't always have the, you know, the best luck with artists on some IDC work, shall we say. I just kind of thought, well, this is, I just really enjoyed it. And I found more, you know, over the years, if you're enjoying it, if you're not battered before you even sit down to actually to write the thing, if you're having fun and you're enthused, then it'll probably come out in the work. And I think, and also as well, it comes back to that thing. It's more and more. I mean, I was thinking this recently, reading Al Ewing's Hulk, which is very good. There's just a confidence of voice in that, and I think there's a confidence of voice in the Small House, and I think the best comics is like Hickman's X-Men at the moment is the same. You know, you get the best work if there's a confidence and an ease you feel from the, you know, you feel the creator's in control of what they're doing, which isn't always the case. So I think with Dread and with this and working for 2080, it very often feels sort of, you know, we're all comfortable sort of, you know, trusting each other.
Henry, one of the things that's really marked Rob's time writing Dread, but not just Dread, but Low Life as well, has been the large selection of supporting characters that have been introduced to the strip. Not just by Rob, actually, but by Al as well, because you get Judge Maitland. When you're not only drawing these characters over a substantial period of time, but also sharing them with other artists, you know, there are other artists who are drawing their stuff. Are you aware of your changing attitudes towards them, changing attitudes to how you present them, or is it fairly fixed?
I heard an interview recently about Judge Maitland, from Al, and because I think that was one of Al's characters, and the original concept has completely changed. And I think when it got to me to draw her, I think I didn't have the reference from the beginning, so I kind of had an up to date thing, and I even updated even more. So it became so far away from the original character that perhaps what Al was kind of suggested, but like I kind of like this set of characters. They sound like a bunch of comrades in arms, you know. Although comrades is probably the wrong word, isn't it?
Do you sometimes feel that you have a bit more fun with the supporting characters in Dread? Because obviously, as we've said, Dread is quite monolithic, he's quite stoic, so all his emotion is through either extreme action or tiny little changes in demeanour and things like that. But with characters like Maitland and Sam and all the others, there's an opportunity for a bit more expression. Do you find that?
Yeah, absolutely. The characters, they seem to have their own you know you've got Dirty Frank as well, and he's kind of has a bit of the comedy angle to the whole thing, although it you could just play it straight and the comedy just sort of flows through him. It's basically, and Sam, I think, is a very heroic character. I think, I love that character. And, these guys sort of play off each other, and they've got their own and things going on. It's kind of... who else have we got? We've got Giant as well. He's in there.
Yeah,
and who else?
Is Maitland, and then there's this kind of sort of Gerhardt is briefly in it, right?
Yes, of course.
That little sort of Dread's little secret cabal-y group. I grew and had I'm enormously fond of all of them. I think Dirty Frank and Judge Sam especially. Judge Sam just is. The fact that he was just an optimistic character, you know, just a genuine optimist in that hellhole of a city is something that made me actually like him enormously.
The Small House, and this is spoilers for people who haven't read it, ends quite finally, shall we say, brings a close to the end of a particular character's arc. Rob, you've subsequently done some stuff with Chris Weston on the Judge Penn storyline, which does feed in a little bit to the ongoing continuity of this. What's next from your point of view for you writing Dread? Because you've and again spoilers. You've killed off two of your main antagonists in the last year. So what plans do you have, if any?
I don't know if I can say, really. I mean, it is interesting, though. I mean, we're not saying who. When you kind of genuinely love a character, you almost feel like you should kill them off because it's going to have an effect, right? You want to have an emotional effect in the story. You want to hopefully make people care about
someone and then you kill them and you go, oh no, I really like that character. And you know, so, but when you do it, you also, you're gutted. And also from a writer's point of view, you take away a lot of story possibilities. So that, you know, I with several characters in Dredd's cast that I've written and sort of built up and got to know, a few of them have gone in the last year, and so I started writing another Dredd recently, and I must admit, I was kind of thinking, oh, I wish I had that character. But that's kind of I think that's one of the cool things about, hopefully, about The Small House and about Control, the Judge Pin story I did with Chris Weston, is I think you hopefully feel that no one is safe, and it's genuinely a dramatic event, right? There's not that thing of, you know full well that Spider-Man and Superman and Batman are going to get out alive, you know. So it's just doing that horrible, horrible manipulative writer's thing of trying to make people care about a character just so you can kill them off. There is more coming. I've just started writing a new Dredd this week, actually. Certain characters will not be appearing in it, as is evident from certain things that happens to them in a Small House.
From your point of view, Henry, what are the things that you want to do with Dredd in the future? Because obviously there's several writers that you've worked with, and people like John Wagner, Al, Rob. Are there stories and characters that you hope to work with again in the future in a particular way?
Yeah, there are. I mean, I'd like to work with you again, Rob, and it's kind of, well, and John as well. But like and Al, yeah. But I'm taking a hiatus. Is that the right word from Dredd for the time being? I've got a few other things to work on, so I'm looking forward to getting back on Dredd at some point in the future. And looking for the right angle, of course, to sort of. All the right story, yeah, that would be good.
Well, Henry, this Dredd I wrote, started writing this week, I sent an email to Matt, I think, last week, going, can Henry draw it, please? So we'll, hopefully your hiatus isn't too long, Matt.
We'll see how it goes.
And we've chosen the week of the release of The Small House to do the Day of Dredd. This big promotional thing to try and get more people into Judge Dredd and to encourage them to pick up not just the classic stuff in the case files, but also the newer stuff. If somebody was to say, okay, I want to read The Small House, but what are the other trades that I need to pick up? What would you recommend that they do read, Rob, so they can get not just the direct storyline, but also kind of your influences from previous stories?
Well, in terms of a direct storyline, they should read Trifecta, and then they should read Titan. And they should probably, if they really want to go full background, they should read the Low Life collections as well, sort of Mega City Undercover, right? Mm. But in terms of sort of, I was thinking about this and talking to someone the other day, and just saying one of the reasons I enjoy writing Dredd so much is, I think, is it feels like the hard work's already been done, in as much that his voice is so, when you start writing Dredd, you can hear the internal voice, and that's because it's Wagner's voice, right? It's Wagner writing Dredd. So I would, if anyone's new to this and just wants to sort of pick up sort of the best Dredd, they should read The Apocalypse War and Block Mania for me. And that's kind of, for me, that's probably John's finest Dready moment. So there's a lot, but definitely buy my stuff, because we need royalties, right, Henry? We need definitely need royalties.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and I'd say the same. I'd love the way that Block Mania goes into Apocalypse War and you don't know it, that the readers are in the dark, and suddenly you're off on another adventure. It's the same with the Cursed Earth going into the Day the Lord Died. You know, as soon as Dredd's away on a little holiday in the Cursed Earth, he comes back and a tyrant's taken over. But Yeah, yeah, it's those old things. And of course, the original Judge Death with Bolland, of course. So you add a few of those into the mix, and for the brand new Dread readers, yeah. Day of Dread.
Yay.
It's going to be a dreadful day, isn't it?
Well, I mean, we've got plenty of signings and stuff around, so it's been fairly dreadful to arrange. Me and Owen have been pulling our hair out, what little of it is left. But looking forward to it. And Rob, you're at Forbidden Planet on Thursday night in London.
I am.
For the launch of Small House. I don't think we've got you at anything, Henry, have we?
I don't think so, no, unfortunately.
No, that's fine. But lots going on. Really looking forward to seeing the reaction to Small House, the special convention exclusive hardcover edition, which we had at San Diego, and we'll have at our UK shows at MCM Scotland, MCM London, and Thought Bubble, While Stocks Last, has gone down really, really well with people. So, looking forward to seeing what the general release has to say. Well, thanks very much to Rob and Henry for chatting away about Judge Dredd, the Small House. Don't forget, this Saturday is the Day of Dread. There's events happening all over the country, also internationally and online. So, head along where you can and celebrate Britain's biggest comic book export and, in our humble opinion, greatest comic book character. We'll see you next time on the 2000 AD Thrillcast. Until then, Splendid Vertwig.
Power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000 AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline and follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down!